Back with you on The Takeaway, I'm Matt Katz, in for Tanzina Vega. UFOs and the possible existence of extraterrestrial life have long been staples of our popular imagination. Flying saucers and little green men, tinfoil hats and crop circles, that sort of thing. People around the world have also long claimed sightings of UFOs. Like they say on The X-Files, many of us want to believe, including some of our listeners.
My uncle was a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force in the 1960s, and he said that there were plenty of things that were flying around that were unexplainable. He went on to tell me that the Air Force and various governmental agencies kept information from the public in an effort to avoid public panic.
I did think that I had once seen a UFO. I was working at X Games 3 in San Diego. Something was just flying around the sky. Everybody's looking up at it, and it kind of had an idea of, wow, is this how we find out? But it turned out to be a missile test gone awry.
I will say that I'm pretty confident that I and my father and my brother all saw the Loch Ness Monster. So there are things we don't understand, but that doesn't mean that it's aliens.
But it's not just people like you and me intrigued by these mysterious objects in the sky. The U.S. government is too. And next month, intelligence agencies are expected to give a report to Congress about, quote, unidentified aerial phenomena. This follows years of leaked photos and videos taken by Navy pilots showing their interactions with said unidentified aerial phenomena in the U.S. airspace.
There's a whole fleet of them. Look on the ASA. My gosh. They're all going against the wind. The wind's 120 knots to the west.
So jump aboard the mothership. We're ending this show with UFOs. And here with us is Gideon Lewis Krause, staff writer at The New Yorker. He recently wrote about how the Pentagon started taking UFOs seriously. Gideon, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Matt.
So how long have UFOs been documented? You traced this history way back in your terrific article.
Well, there are plenty of people who trace it really far back. People have written books about how the prophet Ezekiel's vision of heavenly wheels within wheels was actually an alien spaceship. And then there are cases of purported sightings from feudal era Japan and people who look through Renaissance imagery to see things that look like flying saucers in the background. But as far as the modern era is concerned, it can be traced to the summer of 1947 when the word flying saucer came into circulation.
And then what has happened since? Has our interest in UFOs just expanded exponentially? Has it changed?
Well, what I found, and I had really no familiarity with any of this history before, I found it fascinating, that basically there have been three phases to America's response to UFOs. That from basically 1947 to 1970, what some people call the golden age of UFOs, they were something that were, you know, commonly talked about as a, you know, perhaps not mainstream conversation, but certainly not totally disreputable conversation. You know, they were on the covers of magazines and there were TV specials about them. And the government was constantly saying contradictory things in public about them. So, you know, it's certainly there were people in the government taking them very seriously. Then in the end of 1969, the report was issued that said that, you know, there's nothing here. This is just bunk and nothing to see. And everybody could kind of be licensed to make fun of it. And then so from 1970 or so until 2017, it was just a fringe topic of the kinds of nutcases you were describing. And then in December of 2017, the New York Times publishes a big report about a secret Pentagon program that had been running from 2007 to 2012 that was officially looking into UFOs. And since then, it's kind of been back on the public agenda.
And you had reported that the Department of Defense had set up something called the Unidentified Aerial Phenomena Task Force. What's their main purpose?
That's a good question. I mean, as far as anybody knows, it's really just a couple of people in the Pentagon. This was announced last August. And the idea is that they should be able to pull together different sets of disparate agency data. So, you know, geospatial data from one agency and acoustic data maybe from another agency to try to see what the government might be able to put together about what it does and doesn't know about uninvited incursions into our airspace.
And the big thing that's coming up, as I mentioned in the intro to this segment, U.S. intelligence agencies are expected to give a report about UFOs to Congress next month. What kind of answers are they likely to get? And are we going to be able to read this report that is released?
Well, the first thing to mention here is that in a lot of the reporting, it's gotten lost that this really was just a recommendation made, that there was no requirement that a report be produced. But the expectation is still that there's going to be some report put together in conjunction, the Director of National Intelligence in conjunction with the Deputy with the Secretary of Defense's office, to come out with something for the public and for Congress toward the middle or end of June. And nobody I talk to really expects a whole lot from this report. Nobody thinks it's going to reveal that we've been in, you know, secret touch with various intergalactic civilizations for the last 70 years. You know, there's a possibility that there may be more videos or more data released. It certainly seems like anything interesting would probably be in a classified annex because they want to protect their sources and methods. And a lot of this stuff has to do with, you know, various kinds of secret surveillance systems that they don't necessarily want to reveal in public. So nobody has very high expectations. A lot of the UFO people are kind of cautiously optimistic that this is a sort of wedge that, you know, once this comes out, it'll continue to snowball and there will be increasing federal attention to the matter.
Yeah. You know, the UFO sightings that we often see, there's similarities in terms of what people say they're looking at, but it seems to me that they're always relatively small. And I'm curious if you came across any reported sightings that were maybe big. Like, I've never seen anybody talk about saying they saw something as big as, like, Darth Vader's ship, for example. Are they always relatively small, these what people are saying they're seeing?
No, not at all. Plenty of reports of very big, you know, I wrote about one supposed encounter over the English Channel in the spring of 2007 when a pilot claims that he saw two disc-like objects glowing with a yellow light that were, in his estimation, up to a mile across. And, you know, in a sense, this is one of the problems for the real hardcore UFO people, right, is that these are seen in such different varieties that if one, you know, takes seriously the extraterrestrial hypothesis, which, of course, not everybody does and not everyone should, then you're forced with the fact that, like, well, what then does this mean? Like, that we've seen so many different varieties, so many different shapes, so many different colors, so many different sizes. That's just an additional problem to be solved here.
For sure. And you mentioned, and I should say that the fact that they're called UFOs does not mean that the people who are describing them as UFOs believe that there are aliens aboard. They are just literally unexplained flying objects, right? Unidentified flying objects.
Exactly. But, you know, so on one level, the question, are UFOs real, is completely trivial, right? Because, of course, there are things that are unidentified in the sky that we don't recognize. The question is, do they represent some kind of meaningful category of thing?
Right. Exactly. Gideon Lewis Krause is a staff writer at The New Yorker. Gideon, we'll continue looking up at the sky. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Matt.
I'm David Remnick, host of The New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.